Folks, welcome to episode 55 of the Coach Rob podcast. I am here with Coach Rob himself. I'm David Pingree. We're here to enlighten you with some cool knowledge today. our topic today is causes and solutions for spasm and cramps. This is a topic that was sent in by some listeners or users of Complete Racing Solutions products. And that's where we're getting all of our topics here. So if you've got something that you want to know the answer to, shoot it over here to Coach Rob, and we will get it answered in a podcast format and really dive into it. So let's do that right now.
Absolutely.
For this. I think we need to start with talking about kind of the important functions of hydration. So take us through a little bit about how that looks so people can have a base understanding here.
Absolutely. When you stop and you think about hydration, most of us think about drinking fluid, and there's definitely some credibility to we need to be properly hydrated. When we look at the subject of hydration, we always look at it as having two coins. You have what you need to sustain life. If you want to get technical, it's called the basal metabolic needs. How much do you need to sustain life to stay properly hydrated and have all the appropriate bodily functions? When you get to the other side of the coin, you have to stop and look at what are you losing in the form of sweat? We're going to talk about it here as we get going, but when you think about what goes through your sweat, it's all the electrolytes that you need for muscle contraction, muscle communication, nerve communication. And so if you're just drinking water, you're going to dilute those electrolytes, particularly sodium. That causes hyponatremia, which we'll get into. But when we're looking at hydration, I think people get kind of convoluted with the truth of what's going on. Start by thinking about what do you need to be properly hydrated. I always want you to draw it in almost like a linear line. Everything, the foundation of life is the cell. A cell's over 80%+ water. Cells make up tissue. You look at muscle, it's 75%+ water. You look at tissue, makes up organs. Organs make up a system. So when we look at hydration, most of us just think about sweat. I mean, it goes all the way down to the cellular level.
Right.
And we've got to be able to understand that. And when we get, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but let's just jump to performance. A lot of times people go, oh, I'm just not strong, or I don't have a good aerobic engine. Well, if a cell membrane carries oxygen in the blood and the cell membrane is dehydrated, the surface area is smaller, carries less oxygen. Mm. So who would think that by being dehydrated negatively affects your endurance and your strength and your sprint speed? Now that's in the performance realm. What about one of our listeners that is at work all day and they're struggling with headaches, they're struggling with the ability to focus, they're just really achy? Dehydration.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I've felt this personally. And I feel like the older I get, the more sensitive my body
for sure.
is to, yeah. to this and nutrition and in general. But I will feel almost fluish, mm-hmm. and I'll pee, and it looks like, you know, like a dark beer, and I'm like, ooh, that is a problem.
Absolutely.
You know? And then I start to think back. I'm like, I've not drank any water today.
Yeah. And so. It's a very, very simple formula. For those of you that are at home taking notes, I want you to grab a piece of paper. You take your body weight. You divide it in pounds. Divide that by 2. That's how many ounces of water you need over an 8 to 10 hour period of time. So, I'll go toe-to-toe with anybody that wants to have an adult conversation. This idea that you need to drink a gallon of water a day, if you use the math backwards, unless you're 268 pounds, there's 128 ounces to a gallon of water. Mm. So unless you weigh double that, you shouldn't be drinking a gallon of water. And then you're going to, if you do overhydrate, that's a case that, the term is called hyponatremia, where you dilute the sodium content in the blood. Well, that can kill you. If you guys remember in Atlanta, remember that radio drinking? They had that water drinking contest on the radio show. The lady died in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So for what we're talking about in today's show, you've got to look at what you need to stay properly hydrated without overdoing it, without underdoing it. And so the big question always comes up, well, how much should I drink? Half your body weight in ounces of water over a full day. So if you weigh 150 pounds, that's 75 ounces.
And that would be a baseline, right? So if you're out running and it's hot and you're sweating a ton, that obviously needs to increase.
Well, and that's the other side of the equation. The first question is, well, how much should I drink? Well, to sustain life, it's half your body weight in ounces. Body weight in pounds divided by 2. That's how many ounces you need over 8 to 10 hour day. If you've got a 12-hour day, spread it over 12. I always say 8 to 10, so that way you're not drinking in a bunch before you go to bed and have to get up and urinate 3 times.
Try to be done by 6 or so.
Yeah, it's aggravating, especially if you struggle to get back to sleep. For somebody like Michaela, she can go to the restroom and go right back to sleep and act like she never got up. Not everybody has that luxury. But you bring up the other side of the coin. We have a lot of listeners that don't consider themselves athletes, but they go for a walk. They don't consider that being athletic. You take your dog for a walk. Well, I live in Florida. It's typically very humid, very hot. You can break a sweat going to the mailbox. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't really think that that makes that big of a difference. So when you're looking at proper hydration, I always say there's two sides of the coin. What do you need to stay properly hydrated for basal metabolic needs daily? What do you need for any other activity you're going to do? Now, for some of the listeners, they may get a little overwhelmed on this, but it's a real simple way to do it. For those of you that exercise on any form, weigh yourself naked before your activity begins. When you're done, try to get as close to naked as possible. Weigh yourself.
But there's don't do this in a public place, folks.
Yeah, please. But you have to add a third variable to it. And we'll put it in the resources here. We have what's called a sweat rate calculator. So what you do is you weigh yourself before, you weigh yourself after, and you document how much fluid you consumed in that period of time. Because a lot of people will say, well, I started my workout at 155. I finished at 150, so I lost 5 pounds. Well, not if you drank 32 ounces, because you took in the 32, it went through your pores, you lost it through respiration, you lost it through urination. You also lost the extra 2 pounds, so your net loss is 7. Mm. We factor that into the calculator. The good news is you don't have to have a fancy calculator. All you do is put in the 3 numbers, and the spreadsheet produces it. Now, what we want the listeners to understand is your sweat rate should be between 1 and 2%. Now, this is where it gets a couple double negatives. You want to make sure you should lose some water weight when you exercise. So if you gain weight or you have, because remember we're talking about loss, if you don't lose at least 1%, you're overhydrated. Hmm. If you lose more than 2%, you're officially dehydrated. And what really becomes staggering is when you look at the statistical numbers, if you have a 3%, now let's go to just for even numbers, if you weigh 100 pounds, you're only talking 3 pounds. If you lose 3 pounds, you lose 10-20% of your contractile strength of the muscle tissue. You lose 4 and 5, you could be losing 20% and 30%. So here you are in the gym getting super strong, and then because you're dehydrated, you lose that muscular power. And we talked earlier about endurance as well, because you're carrying less oxygen.
Yeah.
Hydration, in my opinion, is one of the easiest performance tools that's out there, but it gets convoluted with a lot of misinformation and agendas.
Well, and also there's a lot of variables, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what kind of foods are you eating? What's the climate? I mean, you say you sweat a lot in Florida, but out here it's so dry.
Right.
We're in single-digit humidity levels throughout most of the summer. That dries you out.
Absolutely.
I'm a big snow skier. We go snow skiing, you know, and I've always noticed this. I'm super dehydrated at the end of the day. My pee is bright yellow. It's terrible. So I started wearing it's an OGO hydration pack. And just on the chairlift, I'll just take a couple sips. I put the energy fuel in there, and I felt so much better at the end of the day.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Because, you know, you'll ski for 6 hours, and what are you drinking? Unless you have a vodka drink with lunch, but, I mean,
Well,
you're not drinking water.
But you hit a real key term, nutrition. Edible food, nutrition. Mm-hmm. We're talking about hydration. What is high naturally in electrolytes and water? Fruits and vegetables.
Right.
So when you hear us saying the way that we recommend people eat is consume fruits and vegetables and lean protein every time you open your mouth. Now, if you want to get highly technical, and that's the nature of our show today, is the reason why I advocate fruits and vegetables is because we know that people lose those electrolytes through sweat in your office, in your truck, working out. You're losing it all the time. Unfortunately, we normally wait until something becomes a problem before we go, hey, I got to look into the source of what's going on.
Or you go, man, I'm thirsty. I haven't had anything to drink in 5 hours.
Now, here's the crazy part. Now, I hope the listeners don't get frustrated with this. If you're thirsty and you start gobbling down a bunch of water, you could put yourself into a state of hyponatremia where you don't quench thirst. So you keep over drinking water, which then dilutes the electrolytes even more. Now you're in a downward spiral. Mm. So what I always recommend is eating fruits and vegetables gives you the electrolytes. Now you're going to be able to satisfy thirst. But not everybody can eat fruits and vegetables all day long. That's where like our energy fuel was developed. The science behind our energy fuel is looking at what is the intensity that you're going to exercise and at what duration. And we change the formulation, and we add like a lactic acid buffer in there. We add a little bit of protein for our longer, like 3-hour-plus events. But I want our listeners to understand it's not about peddling a product. It's about understanding the science behind the product and why do we develop it, because there was nothing else that was out there. Now, what we're really trying to do is get people to understand Start with what your water needs are daily. Very simple. Convert your body weight into pounds, divide it by two, spread that over an 8 to 10 hour day. That's variable number one. Now we look at when you go to exercise, what are you losing? That's why we train with heart rate monitors. Because if you come to me and you say, Rob, I did a 60-minute bicycle ride. My average heart rate was 140. My max was 150. I can look at the temperature and humidity, and you stepped on the scale. Now we create what's called a temperature silo. I know what your perspiration rate is at that duration, at that intensity, at that temperature. Hmm. Now, some people may go, man, that's crazy. Too much information. But if you think about it, our races tend to be the same time every year. So for those of you that are athletic and you want to race, whether it's a triathlon, a road race, motorcycle racing, whatever it may be, you tend to have the races are the same time every year. Well, now we build a historical database. We know when the temperature is in this range. We usually do it in 5 to 10 degree. We call them temperature silos. We know what your sweat rate is, 50 to 60, 60 to 70. Because when you look at hydration, you talk about go snow skiing. A lot of times people misunderstand, because it's not cold, I don't need to drink as much. Well, then you drink less than you should, so you end up becoming dehydrated. Then you have people that drink too much when it's hot out. They get hyponatremia. It's the exact opposite at the wrong times that what you would intuitively think was going to happen.
But that RH, that relative humidity, also plays a part in how much moisture you're giving off too, right?
100%.
So like in the mountains or in the desert.
Well, the listeners need to understand, water will not evaporate in a water environment. So when you're in a high humid environment, you're essentially in a water blanket. Hmm. And that's where we run into issues of overheating, because now the exothermic process, getting that internal heat out and wicked away through sweat.
Yeah, that's why you sweat more there. You may not be sweating in the desert, but it's still dry. You're still losing moisture.
You're still losing
it. It's just a different way.
But that's where, if you take the emotion out of it, you step on the scale before, you step on the scale after, you measure your intensity and the duration, you can start to build a framework pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. If you know what your sweat rate is at 30, you don't immediately double that if you're going to go for an hour. You got to at least get some baseline, sure, and then start figuring it out. And you if you study anything about residual fatigue, you know, the second 40 minutes is a lot harder than the first 40.
Yeah.
The next 60 is a lot harder than the first 60. So what we're always trying to do is stay ahead of the curve.
So talk a little bit about the difference between a spasm and a cramp, because one leads into the other, right?
Right.
So,
well, and I think that with what you brought up earlier, I think that's the misunderstanding about spasms and cramps. You've got to start with hydration, and we've already spent a few minutes here talking about hydration comes for basal metabolic needs plus athletic needs. Again, the word athletic can be a little bit underrated. If you're walking your dog around the block, you're athletic, because you're outside, you're losing water, you're exposed to heat, humidity, and all that goes with it. When we start looking at a spasm, you've got to, and just so the listeners know, a spasm is a precursor to a cramp. Spasm is a really polite way for your body to say, we've got some issues. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a little subtle.
And that's like if you have a muscle that just starts twitching,
twinging,
or your eye, you know, sometimes I get it in my eye.
But where people get a little bit caught off guard is, there's three reasons why a muscle will go into full spasm / cramp. Either it's exposed to too much load, or there's an electrolyte depletion, or you're dehydrated. Most everybody would go, oh, I'm dehydrated. Could be. Well, you now have a solution on how to correct that, or at least validate it. Either validate or invalidate it. The way that we do it is, we have our athletes step on the scale every morning and every night. At night, you should always be 3 to 5 pounds heavier than you are in the morning, every single day. Because the scale doesn't tell us percentage of body fat. It shows us the body weight in the morning shows us inflammation and swelling, whether that's from exercise and or food. So I go and look at your food log. If all of a sudden you're really jacked up, if you had an easy workout yesterday and your morning body weight's up, that's an inflammatory response to something you've eaten. Mm. When we look at your evening body weight, I should be able to see, and I want to make sure we set the context for the listeners. We're sitting here today. When you wake up in the morning, I'm getting a snapshot of what you did yesterday. Well, if you went to bed last night and you're 3 to 5 pounds heavier, you ever notice in the morning you're back down 3 to 5 pounds? So what is it that we were talking about? I'm trying to avoid chronic dehydration. So if every night you go to bed, you're lighter than you were in the morning, where are you going to be in 5 days? In a deep hole. Mm-hmm. So when we look at hydration, we validate that by looking at scale in the morning and the evening. We validate your electrolyte intake by looking at your food log. Are you snacking on fruits and vegetables? Are you rehydrating with energy fuel? And then we look at your load levels. And that's one of the things that people don't understand. We see this quite often in high levels of competition where somebody thinks on race day, and I don't want people to think that I'm naive. Certainly there's going to be those days where you're going to go to the well. You're bar to bar with somebody and you're going to go to the well. However, there can't be so much of a gap that you think that you're just going to be able to pull this performance out of your back pocket that's 28% better than you've ever performed at. Whether you want to look at wattage on a bicycle, heart rate monitor, lap times, whatever you want to take a look at, the gap can't be that much bigger.
Right.
Now, when we start getting into high level of performance, like we just had the World Championships here in Utah for the sport of triathlon this weekend. We just had the Supercross Championship this weekend. We look at what we call critical speeds and threshold of fatigue. It's a little bit beyond the scope of what we're talking about today. But if for those that ride moto, if you've never broken a 2-minute lap time at the track and you go out and you try to run a 152, the body's probably going to retaliate. It's not used to the intensity. It can't get rid of the heat quick enough. You can't deliver sugar, and the muscle's going to go, whoa, this is like asking for way too much. So what we want to look at is making sure that the gap between what you're trying to perform at versus what you train, not every day, but there's got to be race day simulations. There's got to be certain interval work that's done that helps bridge that gap so there's not as much of a shell shock. A lot of people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, I think I'm just dehydrated because I'm cramping. Well, that could be part of it. And I don't want to convolute it and say, well, gosh, that's a lot to think about. It's really not. If you call me up and you say, I'm dealing with spasms, let me see your body weight in the morning and the evening for the last 5 weeks. Are we in checks and balance? Let me see your food log. Are you snacking predominantly on fruits and vegetables? Because that's where it comes from naturally. And are you making sure that you're offsetting what you lose in the form of sweat? We're in the ballpark. Mm-hmm. Now let's look at soft tissue maintenance, strength. How much lifting are you doing to make sure that the muscles can handle that load? And then do you have good range of motion and flexibility with foam roller and trigger point therapy, contrast therapy, Epsom salt bath? Now the tissue is both strong and it's flexible. You're going to reduce the risk of cramping. But like you say, spasms, just a little heads up notice that there's something bigger coming down the line.
That's the flashing yellow light right before.
Please pay attention.
Talk about the importance of electrolytes for health and performance.
People don't begin to understand how much of a role electrolytes play. When most of us drink a sports drink like energy fuel, you'll notice that you urinate more. So most people who have ever had an experience with an electrolyte drink recognize that electrolytes play a role on fluid absorption. You're urinating more because you're absorbing more. That makes sense. Electrolytes play a significant role in communication. So when a muscle is starting to fire, and this is way beyond the scope of where we're at here, but you guys can Google it and you can see, if you look at something with your medical background, you know sodium and potassium tend to work together.
Sodium-potassium pump.
Exactly. Yep. So the good old-fashioned sodium-potassium pump, there's a certain amount of sodium that sits outside the cell. There's a certain amount of potassium that sits outside. And then there tends to be an inverse relationship. So as the muscle begins to actively move quicker and harder and faster, that sodium and that potassium, they exchange locations inside and outside the cell. What I want the listeners to understand is that plays a significant role for us when it comes to you're putting a demand on the muscle, carry a certain amount of load for a certain duration of time without falling off. Well, electrolyte depletion will cause that, literally the electrical communication will start to become less and less strong. You get less and less power, less and less endurance, because the electrolyte communication, the electrolytes are part of the communication process. So when those become depleted, you've got less firing going on. So that's where it plays a significant role. Not to be redundant, but we just had the championships here in Utah. Super dry environment. You're not sweating as much as you think you are. And then all of a sudden you see the white crusty lines on their race kits, you know. And so you see a guy that's putting out 350, 400 watts, and then an hour later is on struggle bus. Uh-huh. Because they dropped their water bottle or they missed an aid station or something like that. And that's when you start to realize the power of electrolytes to muscle contraction. And again, for our listeners, I don't care if you're just trying to get through a big board meeting. Electrolytes, low blood sugar, I mean, it plays havoc on your brain's ability to stay focused and to keep that performance level up. We don't realize how much, when we think, how much we drain our brain. Or excuse me, how much our brain drains our body. So our liver brain feeds our brain. So if you're doing a lot of heavy, focused, playing music in a board meeting, whatever, not to even mention athletics, your liver's draining. Your brain is draining that gas tank in your liver. You got to keep it replenished.
So give me some electrolyte takeaways here.
Well, the biggest thing with the electrolytes is ask yourself, where do you get them from? There's no fancy science behind it. They come from fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. This is why I'm so adamant about certain quote-unquote eating programs that are out there where they say, oh, don't eat fruits and vegetables. They have sugar in them. That's kind of an asinine statement because the fruits and vegetables have vitamins and minerals. Those are catalysts for energy. And you and I have talked about this in our previous shows. If you're trying to create a fire at a campsite, you don't sit there with a match against a big old log and wonder why it doesn't get going. Right. Well, the catalyst for energy is going to be vitamins and minerals. Where do they come from? Fruits and vegetables. Now, I know there are people that will call in and say, hey, Rob, you know, I've gone on, we'll take the big one, keto, or all these other ones that are out there. Yes, there's a difference between the body will survive versus thriving. And yes, you will cannibalize a ton of muscle, or excuse me, body fat to survive, but that's not going to create an environment of athletic success long term.
Right.
So when we look at the electrolyte side of things, fruits and vegetables provide vitamins and minerals, catalysts for energy. And today's show's in its subject, it provides much necessary electrolytes in water. So if you look at those two elements, where do you get them from? Fruits and vegetables. When you get into the actual production of energy, and this has been validated over and over again, the body would much rather prefer to fire on carbohydrates than it would straight fat. And what's interesting is fat burns more efficiently in the presence of carbohydrates. Again, you could go to good old Google God, as we always tease about it in our office, because then everybody's an expert on nutrition and physiology. But yeah, I mean, it's no secret. It's been around for forever. That's why I always find it interesting. Like in our office, we coin it KISS, keep it simple and sustainable. Mm-hmm. Because yes, I can take and park you in a parking lot, dehydrate you and go, yeah, we lost some weight. No, I just dehydrated you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that weight's coming right back.
That's exactly it. And when you think about the trauma and the stress of the human body, now what you've done is started to create a lot of yin and yanging where the body's going to constantly try to compensate. That becomes even more stressful on the system. And, you know, you and I have a moto background. I always, in a very demented, because as you know, I've got a demented sense of humor. If we put physiology in the same absolutes as moto, when I say moto, car moto, drag racing, cars, motorcycles, whatever it may be, wouldn't it be amazing if we knew when we ran out of gas that we came to a screeching halt? And we've talked about it, and I'm not making light of it at all. If you've got somebody that's got an insulin pump or has, you know, diabetes, you see how literal life and death it is. We take for granted that our pancreas does what it does to produce insulin until you're around someone who doesn't and you realize it's life and death. Can you imagine if we ran out of fluid, it was like a motor, and it just seized the motor? We would be a little more comprehensive. You know, we'd be a little bit more cautious.
Yeah, unfortunately, our body is incredibly proficient at staying alive.
Well, it's been created in a way that it will adapt and overcome until we literally exhaust it of all options. Mm-hmm. Keto is a perfect example. The body is designed that it will adapt. Doesn't mean that it's a healthy environment. It will. That's why we did a podcast on the difference between thriving and surviving. I want to make sure that the body's always getting stronger. Obviously, health, wellness, then performance. Mm-hmm. But if you want to throw the body into a state of, hey, can you overcome this? The body's pretty astounding. It'll do it.
It's amazing.
But if you look at the way that the body makes any kind of adjustment, if you start to realize it makes adjustments on, you know, if you and I want to build a house, we can't just wish it into existence. It takes pieces and parts to build a house. When you're trying to fabricate health, wellness, and performance, it's pretty simple. Lots of food, lots of sleep. Everything else in between there is just a modality. But if you get too much activity with not enough food and not enough hydration and not enough sleep, what do you get? A diseased body. Mm-hmm. And then we mock it up with all kinds of titles and everything else. But if you go back to the original, what we talked about, a cell makes up a tissue makes up an organ makes up a system. Why do we wait till the system's diseased before we go, hey, I guess we should do something about it? Hence, adrenal fatigue, Epstein-Barr, Addison's disease. Fatigue-related blood disorders. Hmm. Well, when you go get your blood work, what are they telling you? That you've got some micronutrient in your blood that's out of range. Where do those nutrients come from? Food.
Yep.
So if you burn them too much, you're going to put yourself into a negative. And now I go back to the integer line. If you start your day at zero and you burn it up to -5, but you'll need enough to get to -3, you're starting tomorrow at -2. Hmm. And then we go, that's why I get so frustrated when we look at some of the health issues. They are avoidable. But if you have people that say, suck it up, buttercup, you know, let's be Mr. Tough Guy, it bites you.
Well, the takeaway here, I just want to point out on our notes here, muscles can't move without electrolytes, and they can't relax without electrolytes. And I think that that's maybe missed.
Think about how profound that comment is.
Yeah.
Without fruits and vegetables, where your electrolytes come from, a muscle cannot move. And like we talked about, if you look at sodium, potassium, and then you look at the other electrolytes, they play a role on creating muscle activity. And then as you slow yourself down, that redistribution, let's stay on the subject of sodium and potassium, that sodium and potassium, that redistributes back in and outside of the cell. So your muscles cannot relax without electrolytes, and they cannot perform without electrolytes. So even though when we started the show, it may seem like it's a benign subject, the spasm usually gets us in, catches our attention. The cramp stops us in our tracks.
Yeah.
What can we do to avoid it to begin with? Just be aware of your hydration, snack on fruits and vegetables, and then look at your heart rate and figure out your perspiration rate. And I don't want to sound, snide when I say it, but it's literally that simple.
Well, there also is, if you aren't getting enough fruits and vegetables, or you are not supplementing with like an energy fuel,
mm-hmm.
or you're adding in some of those electrolytes, but you're drinking a ton of water and you're like, I'm good. I'm drinking all this water. You're actually pissing out more electrolytes and making your situation potentially worse. If your cramps or your issues are coming from an electrolyte imbalance. Mm-hmm. So that's just something else to consider. That's another factor. People might go, I'm cramping. I'm going to drink a bunch of water.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally a life or death awareness because you have somebody that will, like Michaela and I traveled quite a bit and we were at a gym and right there on the wall, they had an 8.5 by 11 that said, drink 1 gallon of water a day. Well, my wife is 98 pounds. She's 5 feet tall. If she drank 128 ounces, she'd be sick as a dog.
Mm.
Now, how many other people are in the gym? That's a petite female.
Yeah.
That's frightening part.
That's
the
rough
lack
advice.
The lack of knowledge, because you go to a gym where, and again, I'm not discounting anybody who owns a gym as not having knowledge. The information I'm sharing with you is stuff that I heard at the Olympic Training Center coming from athletes that are trying to get the most out of their body. But for the sake of our listeners, we want health, wellness, then performance. So health and wellness is going to be understanding what to drink on a daily basis. And then performance is jumping into that other element. How hard are you training? How long are you training? Then we have to figure out what your perspiration rate is.
Sure. So some of the causes of dehydration or effects of it, you've mentioned some of these, less oxygen in the blood. So your strength and endurance are compromised.
Yep.
What else do we have?
Well, the thing that you've got to keep in mind is, and this is kind of a domino effect, and it's almost an endless loop, and I'm hoping this will resonate with the listeners. Here you are, you're trying to be healthy, first and foremost. So if you're not taking into consideration how much water you need daily and you're not figuring out your sweat rate, well, then we know that your blood is going to be dehydrated. We know that your muscles are going to be dehydrated. Your brain's going to be dehydrated. Your bone's going to be dehydrated. Now we're really prone for an injury. When we're looking at performance, and we see this quite a bit, even for people who are just, and I'm always really trepidatious. I think everybody that's a human being is an athlete. If you're walking your dog, you're an athlete. Because some people will hear, well, that's only relevant to athletes, so they don't listen. When you are dehydrated, the heart rate is going to be higher to walk around the block. Forget high-end athletics. Because as you and I are sitting here right now, your muscles need a certain amount of oxygen. Well, it might be able to do that at 55 beats. Well, you start moving around quickly, the heart rate has to elevate to deliver enough oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to talk about the metabolic byproduct and cleaning out the system. Just getting enough oxygen to sustain what you're doing, whatever the it may be. Well, as you go higher and higher, the body's number one goal is to never die of a heat stroke. Think about that. That's what we call the hierarchy of needs. So the body is always going to focus on trying to maintain core body temperature, but you're dehydrated. Now you're throwing physical activity on it. You might be able to jump on a bike ride and go out and cruise. I'm just using very loose numbers. You might be able to ride your road bike at 130 heart rate and average 19 miles an hour. Well, now all of a sudden today, that same 19 miles an hour, that heart rate's 145. Why would that be? Because you're still putting the same oxygen demand on the muscle to go 19 miles an hour, but because it's dehydrated, it's carrying less oxygen, it's going to be artificially elevated. Now, what does that do to your sweat rate?
Increases it.
Heart rate goes up, sweat rate goes up, calorie burn rate goes up, and now you're swimming in a circle that an endless loop that's going to end in dehydration or hyponatremia, because now you're thirsty and you start pounding straight water instead of electrolytes. Now you dilute the electrolytes that are in the system. Now we have a very, very dangerous and vicious cycle. And I just want to revisit. When you have a case of hyponatremia, you never satisfy thirst. So you keep drinking and drinking, and all of a sudden your belly's distended like you're pregnant. The problem is you still haven't quenched thirst. So the brain's like, I need more fluid, and you keep going until literally you have to have your stomach pumped out or it kills you. Hmm. On the dehydration side, it's pretty simple. First thing is our skin will stop sweating. We'll start getting cotton mouth. Then we start getting little hints of cramps. Then we start to feel like somebody's got a soldering iron on our head. We got a lot of stop gaps on dehydration. You don't get that on overhydrating. That's the scary part. Mm-hmm. And even in our sport, there's one person in particular that I believe died of hyponatremia. I've spoken to his brother about it, and he didn't think it was. But if you look at the videotape, he's riding. It's in an S turn, and it's an outdoor national. He falls over. The flagger comes over, helps him get on the bike. He goes to swing his leg on and misses his bike like James did at Daytona after he knocked himself out on the wall. He gets back on the bike, goes two turns later, falls over. They rush him to the hospital, and he passes away. To me, that's hyponatremia. Because just so the listeners know, the external symptoms of hyponatremia is just as if you're inebriated. Slurred speech, loss of balance, blurry vision. I mean, here he couldn't put his leg on the bike. He had lost his balance, you know, so... It's a very serious situation.
Yeah, it is. Scary stuff. I want to ask just a question here from personal interest.
Sure.
How much weight do you put in if I'm out, maybe somewhere I don't have a scale? How much value can I put into just like urine color?
That's a great checks and balance.
It's a very generic tool, but if absolutely. You have nothing else.
Yeah, it's a great tool. Now, there will be some people that will argue, well, if you've had a high protein intake for breakfast or you took a multivitamin, B vitamins will tint your urine. So yes, if you took a multivitamin, so you have to kind of factor that in. But I think it's a fantastic litmus test. It may be a little bit beyond the scope of today's show, but if your urination is darker in color, smell it. If it has an ammonia smell, that discoloration in your urine is the breaking down of muscle tissue. And a byproduct of that is going to be ammonia, and you'll smell that in your urine. It's pretty pungent. Mm. So it's another checks and balances. If you're urinating and it's clear and it doesn't have a pungent smell, you're probably in the ballpark.
Okay.
Yep. I'm a little old school. I'm a little bit old school where I like to have a scale, the old-fashioned spin scale that costs $15 at a department store, and I always put it on top of my gear bag. And that way I can't get dressed without getting through that scale.
Because you weigh yourself every time before.
Every time I go out. Because if you ride moto, I understand. You're just like, oh, doggone, I forgot. I got my knee braces and everything's on. You don't really want to get out. Well, if you pack that gear bag and you put that scale on top of it, you have to physically move that scale before you can get to your knee braces or anything else. When I'm doing triathlons and stuff like that, it's the last thing that goes in my gear bag. So before I put on my wetsuit or anything else to go do a triathlon, I've got to step on that scale. And I want you to have an old-fashioned $15 one, just a spin scale. Because it doesn't matter if the scale is accurate. If you step on the scale in the morning and it's 150 and an hour later it's 145, you know you lost 5 pounds. Whether the first number was accurate or not, you know, the anomalies get factored out because you're using the same evaluation. And then same thing, when you get done, you're all geared up, put that scale back on the gear bag so you can't put that dirty gear back in without moving that scale as a reminder, hey, I need to reweigh myself.
Sure.
Now, I don't want people to make it a full-time job for themselves either. You start to find that you do this enough documentation, you start to figure it out. Okay, in 80 to 85 degrees, if I'm going to moto down or I'm going to go run a 10K or whatever, pretty much know what my sweat rate is. Now, and this is where I want our listeners to get excited. Once you get this part figured out, it's just like any other setup that you do for athletics. Whether let's say it's motorcycle, you pretty much know you're going to set your sag every time. You don't look at it as a burden. It's just part of your pre-race routine.
Sure.
And if you go ride, you know, if you do triathlons or whatever, you've got your certain things that you do, whether it's dynamic movements or whatever, you know how much fluid to hit. So that I don't want the listeners to feel like this is always a big rock to put in your backpack. It's really not. It starts to become habitual.
Yeah, and to your point, it's not like you've got to do this every day for the rest of your life. Once you start to sort of get figured out, okay, if the temperature is this, I'm doing this much. You know, that's where I should be.
But you made up something that was really important. important when you go someplace like snow skiing. You go there pretty much every year with, you know, with Amber and the girls. You pretty much know, okay, like you said, you've already caught yourself in the past going, gosh, I'm really dehydrated at the end of the day. What'd you add? Simple hydration pack.
Yeah.
Fixed it.
Fixed it.
That's all it was. I always say a sense of awareness is 99% of it. But for the sake of the listeners, and the reason why we do these podcasts is for our listeners to understand the why behind it. Don't just tell me to hydrate, Rob.
Yeah.
Explain to me what hydration really is, how to evaluate it, how to fix it, how to keep myself in that straight and narrow. And that's what these are all about.
Yeah. And as you mentioned earlier, this is probably the most simple, easiest thing you can fix to improve health and performance. Mm-hmm.
Well, for our listeners that struggle with migraine headaches, start with hydration.
Mm-hmm.
Then look at soft tissue tightness in the back of the head. You know, it's just, I don't want to sound snide when I say that, but man, you see people that are just searching for everything because they're in so much pain, and I hate to see that, especially, and let's just be honest, sometimes the answer is right here, and people want to take you way over here where they can nickel and dime you. That's not what I'm interested in.
Right. For folks who want to get more information or dive deeper with you on this, where can they go to get some more information or chat with you?
Absolutely. Please check us out at Coach Rob with two Bs, CoachRob.com. When you go to that website, you can choose your sport of choice. We have almost every sport under the sun. We've got a performance program for you, and we'd love to help, especially for those of you that are, you know, if you've got a specific sport, we're there to help. If you're there to lose some weight, we've got that as well with our complete weight loss solution. So I hope this has helped clear up some of the misinformation about hydration, cramping, and spasming.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for listening and tuning in. We got more stuff coming, so stay tuned.